Our message this morning is dealing with the subject of the days of Noah and Lot. I thought it was really relevant for us to consider this very important warning that Jesus gave to the world regarding His second coming. And during our scripture reading, Christ gave a number of signs and conditions that existed in the days of Noah and Lot. He said, you will see that repeated prior to the second coming. I love history. It's one of the only subjects I did well in school because it's made up of stories, and I like the stories. I always remember very well. And Rome was, of course, the greatest empire of the world in its glory, which was largely during the time of Christ. From Julius Caesar through the 40-year reign of Augustus Caesar, that was really Rome in its prime in many respects. The territory reached through the Mediterranean, Spain, finally off into Great Britain and parts of Persia, Egypt. Tremendous empire. We always think of Rome and the decadence of Rome, but you know, for a while there, Rome was a very well-run, organized, moral culture. They called it Pax Romana, the Roman peace. Divorce was prohibited, greatly frowned upon. They respected freedoms, especially among Roman citizens. There was a lot of morality. The Roman soldiers were the police force, and laws were enforced, and freedoms were respected. And it was, you know, for the day in which they existed, somewhat of a moral empire. But with success came prosperity, and with prosperity, slowly the morals began to erode. And a lot is said about the fall of Rome, because we know that when Babylon fell, it fell in a decisive battle with Medo-Persia. We know that when the Persians fell, they fell in a decisive battle with Alexander the Great. And the Greek Empire fell to the Romans. But when Rome fell, it's been the subject of a lot of study, it was a crumbling. It was like an erosion. It happened little by little. It wasn't one battle where someone came and conquered Rome. Though many like Hannibal tried, they had failed. In his classic, Edward Gibbon wrote regarding the fall of the Roman Empire, he attributes the fall to five things. And here's what they are. And see if you see any similarity between these things that pre-existed before the fall of Rome and what's happening in our nation and world today. The undermining of the dignity and the sanctity of the home. Does that exist in the world today? It seems like instead of parents having the responsibility for the children, that's being shunted over to the government and the state. The increasing taxes and the spending of public money for bread and circuses. This is what was happening in Rome. One of our founding fathers, I can't remember which one, he said that as soon as the people realize they can vote themselves benefits from the national treasury, we're doomed. And when the people realize they can vote in people that will give them benefits, we're doomed. I think that day has come. Point number three, Gibbon said in his book, the mad craze for pleasure with sports becoming exciting and more brutal. Of course, you know what happened in the Colosseums with the entertainment and the gladiators and the persecution of the Christians. Do we have sports becoming more brutal? The extremes? Extreme everything now. The building of armaments when the real enemy was the decadence of the people. The decay, in point number five, was the decay of religion with faith fading into mere form, but true morality in religion was lost. All these things we can see existing in the world today. Philip Myers, in his book, Rome, Its Rise and Its Fall, he observed, speaking of the fall of Rome, almost from its beginning, the Roman stage was gross and immorality was one of the main agencies to which must be attributed the undermining of the originally sound moral life of Roman society. So absorbed did the people become, speaking of in the stage, in theatrical performances, so absorbed did people become with DVDs in ancient Rome. I'm just wondering if you're listening. in the indecent representations of the stage that they lost all thought and care for the affairs of real life. People began to live in a fantasy world. Everything they talked about was entertainment today. They wanted to know what's happening in Hollywood. And it's like people lived in this fictitious world of what's going on with the stage and the latest performance and the entertainment and the sports and the pleasures. And I thought that was interesting because it reminds me of the statements that Jesus makes regarding the last days. And by the way, Jesus is not the only one. 2 Timothy 3, verse 1 through 5, Paul describes conditions in the world prior to the second coming. Oh, why am I preaching this message? It's because I think we're near the end of the world. And I want you to think about the signs that the Lord is giving us socially. 2 Timothy 3, verse 1, "But this know, that in the last days perilous times will come." What is the peril? "Men will be lovers of money, lovers of themselves, lovers of money." By the way, what is God? God is love for others. What is sin? It's the opposite of God. Sin is love for self. So where you've got a lot of love for self, you've got a lot of sin. "Lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but not denying its power." They still got the form of religion. Did the people that crucified Jesus have a form of religion? A lot of religious rite, ceremony, ritual, but not the power of love. "And from such turn away." I'd like to return to the passage in Luke that we started with, and I want to bring to your attention the specifics that Jesus mentions. Luke 17, this is one of the places in Luke where Jesus tells about signs before the second coming. It's also in Luke 21, Luke 17, Luke 21. Then, of course, the other passages are Matthew 24, Mark 13. Those are the four primary places where Jesus gives signs and conditions in the world prior to the second coming. Here we are in Luke 17, verse 26. "And as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be also in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. They ate, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all." Right up till that time. "Likewise, as also it was in the days of Lot. They ate, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they built. But on the day that Lot went out from Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even so will it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed." So Christ is commanding us to understand His return, to consider what happened back then, because there are many parallels that we can learn from. Now listen to the specifics I've itemized here. Eating? Anything wrong with eating? If so, try and give it up. I mean, you got to eat, right? Drinking? Marriage? Planting? Building? Buying? Selling. Oh, why would Jesus give those things as a sign of the second coming? The Lord is not saying just these events by themselves, but these events to excess. These events become the God. Let's start with eating and drinking. And by the way, you've heard about the wild orgies they had in Rome. That we always think about the immorality or the sexual perversion connected with that, but it was often around food. They were living for food. It was just one never-ending potluck. Matter of fact, and I don't want to gross you out, and I don't want to be insensitive, but it is a fact of history, that the Romans would gorge themselves at these feasts. Then they had a place where they would go and regurgitate what they'd eaten. They called them vomitoriums. And then they'd go eat some more. Now, there's nothing wrong with eating, but how many would agree that's eating to excess? I mean, it's one thing to eat to live. It's another thing where you live to eat. The purpose in life is just the pleasures, the hedonistic pursuit of physical pleasure. Notice talking about Sodom and Gomorrah. When you think of Sodom and Gomorrah, we typically think of the sexual perversion, right? And the Bible talks about that. Listen to what Ezekiel says was one of the principal problems in Sodom and Gomorrah. Look, this is, by the way, Ezekiel 16, verse 49 and 50. Look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. She and her daughter, meaning Gomorrah, had pride, fullness of food. You know, one of the reasons for that was, the Bible tells us, that the valley of Sodom and Gomorrah was like the garden of God. One reason Lot wanted to go there is it was a very fertile area before it was destroyed and it turned into a valley of salt. It was like the garden of God. They had an abundance of crops and food and grass and pastures for the sheep. And Lot didn't plan on moving into the cities of Sodom. He cast his tent towards Sodom. And gradually, you know, he started out camping outside the city and little by little shopping in the city. Pretty soon they thought, well, you know, they've actually got so many conveniences in the city, and maybe it might have been some pressure from his wife and children, because the malls were in Sodom. And so pretty soon he was living in the city by the time the angels came. It vexed him, though. He didn't want to be there. So it made you think there must have been some outside pressure. But there was an abundance of food. That's one of the characteristics. Do we eat to live or live to eat? I was reading this article. You've seen me quote it before. And this is a cover from National Geographic. We now have more overweight people in the world than hungry ones. There are more than 1 billion overweight, overnourished people in the world and 800 million who are undernourished. We always heard about all the starving people in the world. This is the first time in the history of the world that there have been more people that are actually overnourished than undernourished. Would you say that we've reached the age where we are eating and drinking in abundance? And it goes on there, if you keep reading in Ezekiel, talking about Sodom, if you read in verse 50, and they were haughty and they committed abomination before me, therefore I took them away. What is the abomination that they committed in Sodom? Not only the eating and drinking and idleness. Oh, by the way, I left out the idleness. Do we have, you know, we have more idleness now. When America was founded in the 1700s, and even if you go back 100 years, 80% of people lived on farms. They lived in rural communities. Now, because of the mechanization of farming, only about 20% of the people in North America live in rural communities. 80% live in the cities and the great metropolitan areas. There's so many machines that do all the work for us now. We've even got robots that do what used to be done in factories. And there's a lot more ease and idleness. And you know how many people now, when advertising portrays the average American worker, you know where they are? They work in a cubicle at a desk sitting. The average American worker is working in a cubicle sitting. But one of the sins, it says they committed abominations. What is that abomination? Leviticus 18:22. You shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination. The abomination was sexual perversion, homosexuality. And if you still have any doubts, Jude chapter 1, verse 7, Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them, in similar manner to these, having given themselves over, they gave up to it, sexual immorality and going after strange flesh. Romans chapter 1, Paul refers to that as that which is not natural, perversion, more specifically homosexuality. And this is a delicate subject, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but I think it's an irrefutable sign of the times that was once declared inappropriate and illegal in North America. And by the way, there is a word based on the town Sodom that coins that behavior, is now warmly accepted in the general culture, and the laws are there to protect. I don't know if you've been plugged into what's happening even here in California, but there are two or three laws on the books right now that will increase the rights of people that might have alternate sexual preferences. Would you say that prophecy is fulfilled as it was in the days of Lot? Yeah, I think so. Sexual perversion. I understand that the Episcopal Church and more churches are debating the acceptance of a clergy, and not to mention members, into their fellowship that are practicing homosexuals living with, they could be homosexual or lesbian living with lovers. And is it the I got to be careful what I say here, but I think one of the leaders of the Episcopal Church left his wife, has a partner, and they have voted to accept that as appropriate. Well, you got to read a different Bible than I read to come to that conclusion. And I think that either God needs to apologize to Sodom and Gomorrah or something's going to happen. God is just patient, and so we presume on His patience. Another characteristic is the buying and the selling. Anything wrong with buying and selling? How many of you bought or sold anything this week? Is it a sin to buy and sell? But can things be done to excess? We're living in an age now where there is more that can be bought and sold than any other time. We have channels that are dedicated to buying all the time. Shopping channels. It's not enough that you eventually take your one day a week and you go to the store and get your groceries. Now we got to watch other people shop, or you shop without even leaving the house because you watch it on TV, you call and order it, or you go online and you surf for every conceivable product. And you know what? There are some advantages to buying things online. You can sometimes get some good deals. But think about the materialism in the age in which we live right now. There are more things you can buy or sell now than any other time in the history of the world. The essence of the worldly man is, someone said, he knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. The world's motive is profit. The Christian's desire should be to serve, but it's worldly, collecting, building treasures here on earth. James chapter 4, verse 13 and 14. Come now, you who say, tomorrow we will go to such a city and spend a year there and buy and sell and make a profit. Wherefore you don't know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It's a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Jesus specifically warns against materialism in the last days. Luke 17, you know when he's talking about Lot's wife just before he gets there, notice what he says. In that day he who was on his housetop, like when Noah was told to enter the ark and Lot was told to flee the city, he didn't say, after you pack your bags, flee the city. He said, flee now, make haste, don't look back. Jesus said, speaking of the destruction of the world and the destruction of Jerusalem, if you're on your housetop and your goods are in the house, don't even come down and turn back into the house. Likewise, if you're in the field, don't go back to your house. Run for your life. So many people would say, I want to go, but I've got this stuff in my house. My stuff. Buying and selling. It's talking about a love for things. We find our value not in that we are made in God's image, but in the stuff that we own. And let's face it, a lot of people feel like you got to keep up with society. And you know, one of the reasons that we are largely a world in debt right now is because of the pressure to live above the standard of our earning. And so we borrow for everything. And you're encouraged to do it. I want to close by touching again on Lot's wife. The Bible tells us, when the angels came to Lot, it came to pass when they brought him outside, they said, escape for your life. Do not look behind you. Do not look behind you. Nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed. But his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. Why did she look back? First of all, God is telling us, if you choose to follow Christ, don't look back. If any man puts his hand to the plow and looks back, don't look back. Say, I'm going all the way, and I'm never going to reconsider. I thank the Lord by His grace. I bounce from one thing to another, all these different religions, until I found Christianity. And by His grace, I have never considered any other religion, because there is nothing else. And I haven't looked back. I've gone up and down a little bit, but I've not looked back. And we all have our, sometimes it's one step forward, two steps back, three steps forward, one step back. But I think I'm making progress, but I'm not looking back. I think part of the reason she looked back, she had loved ones in the city. Some of her kids, they mocked Lot when he said, flee, God's going to destroy this place. They mocked their father-in-law. She had kids there. You'd think that'd be natural. But the Lord said, you must not love them more. Don't look back. Maybe her possessions were there. You know, you think and go back to your house. Thing is that God says, don't look back. When you choose to follow Him, our kingdom needs to be somewhere else. It's interesting also, in the days of Noah, the lost were unwilling to move off of their position. There were probably a lot of people who watched Noah build the ark. And they said, you know, the world is wicked. There's plenty of room on that ark. I'll plan on getting on board. When I see the clouds gather, when the rain starts, I'm going to get on board. But did it ever happen that way? The door was shut by the Lord before the rain ever began. They wouldn't move at the right time when they were called. Noah made an appeal, stood in the door of the ark, and said, come. And they said, oh, the sky's clear. You must be kidding. Now? Come now? And they said, no, well, we'll wait. And when we see the water starting to gather, then we'll come. But God shut the door, and that was it. Probation was closed. They wouldn't move out of Sodom. They just were stuck in the rut of saying, well, you know, one of these days. But they waited too long. You know, I thought it would be healthy to look at the contrast between Lot and Noah. I want to be saved like Noah. Look at the difference. Lot was saved by the skin of his teeth. Noah was complete cooperation. Noah invested all in God's work and had no regrets about his investment. It floated during a great economy recession, didn't it? His investment. Lot waited too long and he lost his whole investment. Lot chose the life of convenience and made no preparation for the future. Noah followed a life of hardship and holiness. As a result of that, his family was saved. Noah devoted his life to involving his family in his work, and they were saved. Lot waited to the end, and it's questionable whether even his daughters were saved, even though they got out of town with him. God is inviting us to build an ark. Noah stored away the ark for the flood to come. We need to store away food, don't we? For that time of trouble, that flood that's coming. Those that listened, they were preparing an ark. We need to be preparing an ark, don't we? In our families, be building. In our church, isn't our church supposed to be an ark? That's why we keep doing evangelism here. And I'm glad you folks don't get tired of seeing other people come to the Lord. I can just look around and see so many of you who've come just in the last few years and your lives are changed by the gospel. It'll be nice to have more room for people. Folks end up coming to Central, we run out of room, and then they transfer to other churches, which is okay. But we want to be a place where people are coming to the Lord. I started talking about Rome. I might end talking about Rome. I'll never forget when I went to a place called Pompeii. I was 16 years old when I was living on that boat that went through the Mediterranean and they showed us the ruins. It's now one of the most popular tourist attractions in Italy. Back in 79 AD, it was the Sodom of the Roman Empire, Pompeii. It's where the soldiers went for R&R. They can tell from the frescoes that are still on the walls in this ancient city that there was a lot of immorality. They even have a bordello there with all the paintings on the wall. I can't show you pictures of that, but they're there. And very immoral life. I also think it's interesting that the same Roman legion that had been under Titus that had destroyed Jerusalem in 70 AD were now vacationing in 79 AD when Mount Vesuvius erupted violently and the city was suddenly covered by ash. And it was an example of a catastrophic judgment that fell on that city. You know, the Bible tells us that what happened in the days of Noah and what happened in the days of Lot are set forth before us an example of how the wicked are going to perish. There are two choices. We are delivered from temptation or reserved for judgment. If we choose now to ask God to have complete control of our lives and say, Lord, deliver us. We don't want anything in our lives that comes between you and us. He'll do that for us.